ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Blazer Banter Podcast. I'm Eric Garcia Gunderson, the Trailblazers beat writer for The Columbian, and welcome back. It's been a while since we've had a podcast, but we are past the quarter poll of the season, so I thought it would be a good idea to catch us back up, at least on the podcast front, if you aren't reading everything on The Columbian's website and on the Blazer Banter blog, which I'm sure you all are. We're a quarter of the way through the season, and the Blazers are 9-12, one game out of the 8th seed in the Western Conference. On this episode, we'll look back and take a longer look at things as to how the Blazers have played so far this season, and we'll give out some quarter of the season awards, I guess. We'll also discuss some developments that have been happening on Portland's bench lately and some of the tweaks that head coach Terry Stotts has been making as far as the rotations are concerned, and then we'll get into a more general basketball topic towards the end here, because the Blazers were kind of the focus of a conversation last week that's part of an ongoing conversation about whether intentional fouling should or shouldn't happen late in games against the DeAndre Jordans of the world and what have you. So as we stated, the Blazers are 9-12 through 21 games. They're one game back of the Houston Rockets, who have been a disappointment, but the Rockets are currently the 8th seed in the West. And a couple of things have happened. First of all, the West is not as good as we all thought. The East is better right now, especially after when you take out those top two teams, the Spurs and the Warriors. Well, after you take that away, I mean, the East is clearly better. So that has changed things for the Blazers a little bit. They're still in that playoff race, and now Rudy Gobert went down with a knee injury for Utah, who is in seventh place right now. So Portland has a little bit more of a chance to maybe stick around in that playoff conversation than most people thought. Lots of people, especially nationally, had them Sixers or Lakers level bad, which obviously they are not. And the Blazers haven't been anywhere near that, and in terms of point differential, have actually been seventh best in the Western Conference so far. So what's driving that? Obviously, the number one story outside of the fact that Damian Lillard is playing at an MVP level, or not at MVP for the Blazers at least, I would say that Lillard is the definite MVP of the Blazers and could potentially be an all-star this year in the West. But CJ McCollum has emerged as a legit candidate for the NBA's Most Improved Player Award. If fans want to give someone else an award other than Stephen Curry, I think that CJ McCollum would be a great candidate to be the most improved player. His scoring average has gone up 13 points. He's shooting 39% from long range. His usage rate has gone up, but his turnover rate has gone down. I mean, everything that you want out of a player, CJ has done. And the Blazers have added another 20-point scorer alongside Lillard, and they're making defenses kind of bend to their will, and I think that that has been the biggest factor in the Blazers being a top-five offense so far this year. People saw McCollum go off in the playoffs, but there were some doubts about whether he could sustain it. So he's done a great job of erasing those doubts. Here's Indiana head coach Frank Vogel on CJ's development so far this year.
Yeah, he's very, very similar to Damian Lillard. It's like having two of them out there, you know. So, you know, obviously, if you got your best player out there and you can clone him and, you know, have another guy that gives the same kind of threat off the bounce with the three-point shot, the open court, all those type of things, then you're going to be that much more lethal.
The Blazers went on to win against Indiana behind a huge game from their backcourt after Vogel made those comments before that game, that Indiana game last week. That was probably one of Portland's better wins so far this year. They also lost last week to the Mavericks, but before the game, head coach Rick Carlisle had a lot of glowing things to say about the Blazers in general from Neil Olshey on to Terry Stotts, but he saved his best words for that Blazers backcourt, which definitely includes McCollum.
They've done a great job of kind of redefining who they are and what their direction is. You know, Neil Olshey is, you know, he's the way he was able to flip this thing around, get all these young, hard-playing, you know, hungry guys in here. And, you know, Terry Stotts is one of the best coaches at taking a given set of personnel and finding out, you know, and figuring out how to best utilize them. So, you know, I marvel at their energy, the two guards are playing, you know, at a really quantum level. I mean, you know, Lillard's going to be an all-star again, and McCollum is, you know, having a breakout year, to say the least. And they got a bunch of other guys that can hurt you. You know, the rebounding is a big problem. They have high energy, their depth. You know, they played 11 guys in the first 15 minutes of the game last night. You know, so I'm sure we'll see that kind of stuff again tonight. And you know, they're going to be challenging to play for everybody.
There you have it. A couple of opposing coaches giving their thoughts on the Blazers and CJ McCollum, who has been the most improved player, breakout player, whatever award you want to give, other than the MVP, basically, at this stage, you could give to CJ. So he's done a great job, and he's been a major factor in this team's success so far this year. But another interesting thing that is happening with the Blazers has been the development of their bench. They talked about depth coming into the season, but that was a little bit harder for people to picture when you're imagining guys that really have not played major roles for NBA teams. One guy that was like that was Allen Crabb. Allen Crabb has been a pretty easy guy to notice his success off the bench. He's been a consistent scorer off the bench, averaging almost 10 points a game off the bench, shooting well over 40% from three. And he's been very efficient. But another bench story that I wanted to look closer at, and I did, if you would like to go read about it more on Columbian.com/Blazers, I did a feature on the Blazers bench front court, which now is Terry Stotts putting Myers Leonard, taking him out of the starting lineup and bringing him up off the bench after starting him the first nine games this year. Leonard got hurt, and it opened things up for Terry to experiment a little bit. That move was met with a lot of criticism initially when Leonard first came back. Why is Vonleh playing in the starting lineup if he isn't going to play more than 20 minutes a game? If the start of games is a problem, why not play Leonard? Because you can have more shooting and more scoring, and there's no such thing as too much scoring, right? Well, I mean, all those questions were definitely fair, especially last week when the Blazers were having some rough starts, but it seemed like the data was supporting what Stotts was doing. And all of these thoughts and questions also missed a bigger point here, is that Portland's front court, when their bench is in, actually has an advantage against most other teams. It's given them an edge, and it also may be that Myers Leonard's more natural spot is to come off the bench as a scorer. Leonard's been scoring in double figures for three straight games, which is something that he's never done before, and all of those games he's done that while coming off the bench. And he also pairs really nicely with Ed Davis. That duo has outscored their opponents by 4 points per 100 possessions when they're on the court. And it doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, throughout the course of a game, those little edges could matter. And it has worked well for the Blazers. They actually closed their last game, a win against Minnesota, with those two as their front court. So it's not just a bench look, but it's working really well, and the two guys are really working well with each other, and that's something that I asked both of them about after their win last week against Indiana. I wanted to ask them about the bench's play overall, and then it kind of turned into more of a Davis and Leonard story.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something I was talking to Ed about. You know, his ability to block shots, clean things up, offensive rebounds in the paint, finish around the rim. You know, Gerald coming up with energy, you know, kind of a veteran presence. You know, Allen knocking down shots, being confident. And just our ability to space the court and understand what each guy is trying to do. You know, it's been awesome. It was funny. I was messing with Ed. And I said, you know what? I hate it when I miss shots, but it seems like every time I miss it, you're right there for the rebound. So I kind of like that. But yeah, you know, I think all right, buddy. I think this. I really think this second unit and everybody in general is figuring things out. Unfortunately, it hasn't shown all the wins I wish and we wish we had. I mean, you know, I look back at these games, man, and I'm just like, wow. We could. I mean, our record could virtually be flip-flopped. But you know what? It's growing pains, and you know it sucks to lose. But you learn from that, and just continue to work and see what you can do the next game, the next team, you know, the next stretch, the next road trip. So we're excited. We just have to continue to work and believe in ourselves.
It has to feel good, though, that Ed's grabbing less of your rebounds because you're making a lot more shots now.
Yeah, yeah, I'm feeling better. Definitely in a better rhythm. Guys are finding me. I think we're, you know, Dame, CJ, all those guys are trying to kind of get me flowing, I think, early, which feels good. I know they trust me, but obviously it feels a lot better to knock shots in.
It's not hyperbole to say that Ed Davis's offensive rebounding is elite. And when I asked Davis about playing with Leonard, he went to that aspect of the game that he is so good at, that by Leonard spacing the court, it allows Davis to basically draw single coverage underneath the basket and to take advantage of those matchups and do what he does best.
No, I like playing with Myers. You know, he spaces the floor. He makes things easier on me. And, you know, we're bringing that spark off the bench, and that's what the team needs.
He says he's been glad that you've been there to grab his misses, too.
Right. Yeah, most definitely. Like you said, you know, most teams play, you know, power forward at the center, but, you know, they play the three-man at the four, and, you know, it's just I have a one-on-one, you know, this head-to-head, you know, man-on-man, no chance to get an offensive rebound, and, you know, it's easy down there, especially when he's out there, he's spacing the floor, guys so scared of him, so, you know, he makes things easier on me.
It seems like you kind of have an easy time kind of playing with everyone, though.
Right. So, yeah, man, I just get in where I fit in, man, however it might be, you know, no matter who I'm out there with, man. Like I said, I'm just going to play my role, just play hard, and just try to bring energy, man.
Davis and Leonard have shown throughout their career that they are starter quality or capable of starting, but bringing them off the bench is a big advantage for the Blazers, and it has been so far. There aren't very many teams that bring players that are very good in those positions off the bench or that are at least better than those guys. So Portland is finding a way to use them well, and the credit has to go to Terry Stotts, which I think is another part of this Blazers season so far that has to be discussed is how well Terry Stotts has done. Leonard is usually fourth on the pecking order when he's out there with Lillard, McCollum, or Al-Farouq Aminu, and that's something that just doesn't happen on the second unit. He can get the ball in his hands. His shooting is a real threat because he's probably actually going to get the ball. The Leonard-Davis front court has kind of just really started to expose the fact that most backup front courts just aren't very good. And Stotts deserves credit for exploiting that inefficiency that a lot of teams have on their second unit backcourt. And, you know, when the people that were looking at the team as a deeper team this year, this is the type of stuff that they have to take advantage of if they're going to actually win games and have any hope of sneaking into the playoffs or at least being competitive. And I think that this is an interesting development and something that people should watch for, especially considering Myers Leonard's contract situation and bringing him off the bench. Who knows if that maybe is his better role, and I don't even know if that is going to cost him any money. I mean, you look at Oklahoma City and Enes Kanter got a max deal, and I don't know. I'm just, you know, spitballing here by myself, talking to myself, but who would you rather have, Enes Kanter or Myers Leonard? I mean, who's going to be a bigger threat for your team or for opposing teams? So I think that Terry Stotts has done a really good job of using Leonard and his scoring and his skills to their best way and pairing them with Ed Davis's best skills. But speaking of inefficiencies and something that everyone always loves to talk about, let's talk about intentional fouling, because this is a big conversation that we've been having in the NBA for God knows how long. Last week, the Blazers were in LA against the Clippers, and they lost. Damian Lillard was reportedly blowing chunks in the locker room, but most of the post-game discussion was surrounding the tactics of Terry Stotts and his use of the intentional fouling on DeAndre Jordan. DeAndre Jordan took a Clippers record 34 free throw attempts. He missed 22 of them, which is the first time that anybody's done that since Wilt Chamberlain did it in 1967. And The next night, before the Blazers played the Mavericks, Terry Stotts was asked about that rule, and it was just interesting to hear his take on it.
But like I said, it's a two-way street. He had the option of taking it out, taking them out of the game, and chose not to. So look, I trying to win a game, you know, and you know you got to make decisions that aren't going to be hot popular. I know the Portland fans didn't mind it.
It certainly interrupts the flow of the game. That's the one.
No question, you know. And that's the idea of it.
Yeah,
I think it served its purpose. From our offense standpoint, when he misses a free throw, we're getting a rebound, and we're running off of a rebound. So that is a flowing situation for us offensively. They say it stops the flow of the offense. Well, it does for them. But if you're rebounding the ball and they have to get back on defense because they're trying to rebound as well, now you're looking at an open court situation as if you had gotten a stop in the half court. So it doesn't stop the flow from our standpoint. No, yeah, I mean, you look at the point. We got a lot of good shots. I'll say that. We had a lot of good opportunities. We missed three free throws. I mean, we weren't able to take advantage of his misses. And he gave us enough misses to take advantage of.
The opposing coach that night, Rick Carlisle, regarded in most circles as the best NBA coach not named Greg Popovich, was also asked his opinion on the matter.
You got guys that aren't great free throw shooters. You know, it's a tool in the toolbox. And, you know, if you're asking my personal opinion about it,
sure.
This is a skill game. And in my opinion, changing the rules to mitigate a lack of skill would be a big mistake. One of the reasons our game is so beautiful right now is, you know, there are so many more skilled players than there were 10 or 15 years ago because, you know, when the rules changed back in 01, you know, and you could play zone defense and you could do some different things that you couldn't do before. You know, now the ball has to move. And so, you know, look, every roster, every coaching staff looks at every roster they're playing to find out if there's, you know, there are one or two guys you can use that strategy on if needed. I mean, I'm not a proponent of it unless needed. And if it's something you need to do to you know, change the rhythm of the game a little bit, you know, it's something you need to do.
I don't know if there's a perfect answer to this, though I do agree that the foul game isn't fun or beautiful to watch. But I, like Commissioner Adam Silver and most opponents of abolishing the intentional fouls or wanting to go to a college-style intentional foul rule, I don't like changing the rules of the game to fit a minority of players that aren't good at free throws. Teams are trying the tactic more and more this year, and it's not even against the Dwight Howard or DeAndre Jordan or Andre Drummond. They're doing it against guys like Ed Davis. Minnesota tried it the other night. People were trying it against Jan Mahinmi. But if you ask me, it's going to be impossible to create a league in the NBA where every game is just a symphony of ball movement and player movement. Some games are going to be crappy to watch, and that is just, it's a numbers game. You know, there's also a little bit of a personal drama aspect when someone goes to the line. I think that is intriguing. They call soccer the beautiful game, yet every World Cup final is an exercise in conservative defensive soccer that is not beautiful at all. So the games that we always love will always have warts. Maybe that's why we call it love of the game. Including preseason playoffs, there's almost 1,500 NBA games every year. And it's impossible to think that every single one of them, which first of all, not every one of us is watching, but it's impossible to think that every single one of them is going to be a beautiful game. It's just not possible. And when you're trying to win a game, because that's what basketball is, it's going to be ugly sometimes because you're trying to do everything possible that you can do to win. But the other side of this is we're already seeing this evolution of younger big men that can affect the game on defense and on offense, but also are not liabilities at the foul line. I'm talking about guys like Kristaps Porzingis or guys like Karl-Anthony Towns. And if where we end up after all of this is big men who can change the game on both ends while also being skilled enough to cash in late in the game at the free throw line, isn't that more beautiful than having to change the rules? Isn't the fact that we're evolving into a better game better for everyone. So there we have it. Thanks for joining me on the Blazer Banter Podcast. This has been Eric Garcia Gunderson, the Trailblazers beat writer for the Columbian. You can follow me at Blazer Banter on Twitter. You can go to the Blazer Banter blog. Just Google Blazer Banter. It's the first thing that comes up. And also look for all of the stuff on the podcast on the Columbian SoundCloud page. We have an iTunes feed where you can find the podcast at Blazer Banter. So just be on the lookout for more stuff. I'm glad we could do this again. It's been a while, and I'm sorry for the podcast delay. But, you know, when the team goes on the road, I get a little bit more time to do stuff like this. So hope you'll keep coming back, and hope you'll keep listening. So thanks for joining me again, and we'll see you next time.